Hi everyone, welcome to the fall quarterly meeting of the B-City USA subcommittee on September 20th at 3 p.m. 2022.
Hey, thanks everyone for being here. We have a new committee member because not only did we approve Carolyn's appointment, but the Parks Commission did too. And so she's here with us. I thought we would each do a real brief introduction of, you know, why we're here and what we love about it, and then let her speak to us a little bit. And then it just seems to me it'd be easier for her to take part in the conversation all the way through all the agenda items we have coming up if we know each other first.
I think that's a great idea, Kate. And I just want to make sure that we're ready to start when the designers and the landscape architects are interested in starting. I just want to give ourselves a time limit. Tara, what time are our friends going to jump on? Looks like she's on another call. Well, at some point we will be joined by other people who are going to give us a presentation, but I'm sure it'll be okay.
So do you want to wait and do our minutes after they do their presentation also then?
If they're good. Tara, are you with us? Do you know what time they're going to jump on? Okay. Let's just do it like you were thinking, Kate. Let's just go around and introduce. And then when they do, we'll be ready to shift gears.
Great. Okay.
So I'm Kate Jackson. I'm the chair of the committee, and I actually have only been officially a member of the committee for 9 months now. I joined because I installed a wildlife garden, but I'm also really aware of both the drought, the water management issues we have in the valley, and the fire risk. So I look at this as an opportunity to leverage our needs with other people's needs to better communicate, you know, the whole subject to other gardeners. Albert?
Oh, yeah. Hi. My name is Albert Pepe. I've lived in Ashland for 30 years, and I'm a gardener, farmer, and I'm just more about plants, pollinator, and people, and feeding all of that. And so that's what encourages me and why I'm on this committee. So welcome, Carol.
Thank you.
Christina.
Hey, everyone. And Carol and I got to meet you and work with you already. Maybe you were unofficially part of the team at the time. So I've been on the committee since the beginning. I'd like to say that I had something to do with Ashland becoming a B-City USA since I worked before. We were one, talking to the council and the commission and so forth and so on. And then one of the things that we started at the very beginning was an approved pollinator garden program. And so I was pretty involved in that for a long time. And then now I'm really kind of just pulling back and not doing a lot with the committee, I have to admit. Nancy Apley, who just recently resigned from the committee, she and I were partners visiting a lot of the gardens and approving them. And now Carolyn's part of that committee. So thank you, Carolyn. And we approved a really fun one across from the Ashland Food Co-op last month, maybe it was. And we do have a couple more to approve, or in the queue, at least, anyway. So we need to look into that. And that's one of the topics on the agenda. So, yeah, thanks, everybody. And thanks, Kate, for stepping up. Oh, and I see we have guests. So should we stop and talk to them?
Well, they've heard several of our introductions. I don't want to skip Leslie. Leslie is our liaison from the Ashland Parks and Rec Commission.
Hi, nice to meet you, Carolyn. I'm Leslie Eldridge, Ashland Parks and Recreation Commissioner and Environmental Science and Policy Professor at SOU. My role, as I see it in this subcommittee, is to help with synergies through SOU, of which there are several, and we've been working on those sorts of connections. Students love pollinators. There's a pollinator club that we've been starting to link up with. And of course, to make sure that pollinators and the values, ecological values that this group represents come through when we're looking at park vegetation and projects like East Main, like we're dealing with today. So welcome.
So Libby, can you get us started on with leading to introductions here? And we have, as a committee, have been eagerly awaiting this opportunity to have a discussion with the designers of the East Main Park.
Sure. Well, I'd like to say welcome to everybody, but I'm maybe not the best person to introduce Piper and Aaron. Tara, you've been working more closely with them. We can do that, or we can have everybody introduce themselves and go right into sharing about the project.
Sure. I guess first I'll introduce myself. My name is Tara Kewell. I'm an administrative analyst with the administrative department in Parks and Rec. I help with budgeting and contracting and the capital improvement projects. And I'm the staff contact for this project. Anyone wants to reach out, you can also reach out to Libby or Rachel or myself. We have been, many of you have been involved in seeing the public meetings that we've had regarding East Main Park. And we are in the design phase. And in 2020, we put out requests for proposals, and Terrain Landscape did an amazing proposal. And we have been working with Piper and her team on the design process. And Aaron is also helping with that part of the project. And we're here today to, because we've got some preliminary designs and community feedback, and we're meeting with specific user groups in order to get more detailed feedback. And so I will hand it off to Piper.
Good afternoon. I'm Piper Von Chalmier, Principal of Terrain Landscape Architecture. So glad to be here this afternoon, and thank you all for meeting. We're excited to share. I don't know, has anyone not seen some of the, not attended some of the previous meetings, the public meetings? Is there anyone that this is going to fall on fresh eyes?
That would probably be me. I'm new, so.
Well, welcome. I'm glad that,
thank you.
Yeah, if you have any questions, please, well, if anyone has any questions, please let us know. You know, like Tara said, we're in what's called design development. So we've kind of passed through the schematics where we kind of do this programming piece and figure out circulation and where the sun sets and, you know, that sort of a thing. And now we're kind of developing the design, getting a little bit more granular. And this is to set us up so that we can then go into construction documents so it can be built. So it's a perfect time to meet and go through some of the, you know, the planting, but we'll just walk you through the entire project, you know, before that. And then we can talk about, you know, some of the more specifics with the planting and the pollinators and that sort of thing. And with that, I'll hand it off to Erin to introduce herself.
Hi, I'm Erin Gabacorda, designer at Terrain Landscape Architecture, and just happy to be part of the team. Like Piper said, we've been working on this for a little while, and we've gotten some more general public feedback and everything, so we're looking forward to getting some specific feedback from you guys and some input on the planting as we move forward. Nice to meet everybody.
And I think next I'd like to share my screen, if that's possible. Not yet. I don't know who that was.
Yep, hold on. Let me see about that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Now your co-host, you should be able to share.
Okay. Actually, I have one question. So this is Bee City, and do you meet monthly? Is it a regular meeting that happens, or is it more quarterly, or is it scheduled?
I can give a little bit more context on that.
Yeah.
As part of the Bee City USA designation, we meet quarterly, and we also have an annual goal setting. So that means about 5 meetings a year. Mm-hmm. And then we have a few working groups that that undertake projects outside of the formal meeting structure. And mm-hmm. then our goals within those working groups are a few different objectives that either A, support pollinator-friendly landscapes in our community, or B, educate the public about pollinators and their conservation. So those are our two main directions that we, those are the two main headings under which our projects tend to fall. And when we get together as a big group, it's quarterly.
Great. And how big is the group?
This is the whole group.
This is the whole group? Okay.
Yeah. Christina, Albert, Carolyn, and myself, and with Leslie as a liaison.
Wonderful.
So since the East Main Park project was on the horizon, the B-City USA members have expressed a lot of interest in the project. And so they were very excited to meet and share their recommendations and hear from you all. This is one of our regular quarterly meetings, but we're just taking one big chunk of it to do this.
Awesome. Wonderful. Thank you. All right. With that, we will share the screen. And Aaron and Tara, please jump in if there's anything that I miss. I tend to burn through stuff pretty quickly, so I'm sure I'll forget some important details. This is the schematic design. This is what, you know, the public has seen so far. We have developed things a little bit further than this, you know, as we're getting in through into the weeds, you know, as far as layout and grades and property lines and all those sort of thing. Here's East Main over here on the right side of the page. Basically, in the center of the site, you would turn in off of East Main into a parking lot. I'm going to see if I can zoom in. So the parking lot, you know, has several cars. There's a couple crosswalks. Originally, we had, and we're still exploring this with now, we have a civil engineer helping us with, you know, the grades and the parking and the curbs and all that sort of thing. You know, we have these little grain garden pieces around around the parking lot to help with the stormwater. This purple hatch that you see over here on the right-hand side is also a proposed rain garden. I will say that because of the slope of the site, we are keeping rain gardens, but they are now moving to the other side. But the concept is still there. Down over here, this is actually the east side of the park, the dog park. There's an area for smaller dogs or older dogs. And then, you know, the rough and tumblers are over here with the bigger area and maybe some more agility for the dogs on both sides. But this would be more specific for larger dogs, high energy dogs. This would be for slower dogs and maybe older dogs with a shared covering here so that, you know, the humans can get some shade during the hot summer months. We really see this as being the central axis of the park, and through this entire piece is this multi-use path that goes from Abbott, which is actually to the south of the park, all the way through, and multi-use being for pedestrians and bicycles, all the way through the park connecting to East Main, bringing people all the way through the park from the neighborhood and out to East Main and vice versa. In this central axis, we have a central play area. It's nature-based, so there's not the typical primary color central structure. It's logs and rocks and tunnels and some things for the children to interact with. This around this, you can kind of see this horseshoe shape that circles the central play area is really what we think would be a wonderful place for more of that pollinator, one of the greatest places for the pollinators. We're doing another park in California, and it's specific to hummingbirds, but it's a play area with lots and lots of hummingbird plants. But there's also some mason bee towers and some other things, you know, put within the play area so that the kids can also take a break from playing, and, you know, there's an educational piece to it. These little structures, this one right here and this one right here, the porta potties. The other piece of the park over here on the west side is the bike park. And this is a pump track, which you see in the dark color, the asphalt, with a skills course, which is more dirt paths. And each of these will break down into some sheets in the next couple of sheets. So we'll get into some more of the details so you can kind of get a visual, because a lot of people don't know what a pump track is, including me, until I started this project. Here we have the opportunity for some more rain garden stormwater treatment, which is probably a really great spot for it because of the grades. So this one won't necessarily change. a multi-court, multi-sport court here in the center with a lawn for kids to play on. We do have a small berm in the center so that this track here, which would be used for like striders or scooters, the kids can go up and come down. So this is really a bike park for little people. And then it doubles as a little bit of an amphitheater perch, you know, for watching multi-sport games. Over here is the community garden. And, you know, we started to dive into the layout of the community garden. And, you know, which way do the boxes want to face? What's in the boxes? How many boxes? You know, where's all of these pieces that really make up the community garden? And at some point, one of the commissioners suggested that we just kind of put a halt on all of this and wait until we have some more input from the community gardeners themselves instead of trying to design it without them. But regardless, this is the entire spaces of the community garden. We did enlarge in it from the original concept. So it's I don't remember the size. Erin, do you remember the size that within the fence?
I don't remember off the top of my head. It may be on one of the sheets in the set. But
oh, okay, great. Yeah. You know, one of the things that wouldn't change necessarily is, you know, the gate to get in, which is this little piece right here. This would be a nice covered shade area for the gardeners. These big gates here would be for the compost. So there would be dual access from the inside and then also for delivery from the outside. And then a storage shed, obviously, for the gardeners. Currently, if you ever drive down Abbott Street, there's a cut in that accesses this you know blank lot currently. So we would use that for the vehicular access for the garden parking. So the gardeners would be able to come in, park in this garden parking area. These gates would be locked unless you were a community gardener and you had a key to get in. And then if you were on a bike or if you were walking, you would be able to come in off of Abbott Street and take this multi-use path all the way into the heart of the garden. The other aspect of this park is the walking trails. And I think that's one of the things that we heard from a lot of the close neighbors is they wanted to keep it somewhat undeveloped, adding some more trees and some walking paths, which would be like a crushed gravel or a DG or something that's a little bit more natural that would, you know, circle the meadow and connect to the other elements within the park. Also, as far as planting goes, you know, we want to put as many trees as we possibly can where the people are going to be hanging out. You know, for example, this lawn area, the multi-court, the play area, dotted throughout the bike park area, which the bike park I forgot to mention, this is a placeholder. The design of it is still to be determined once we meet with the Rogue Valley Mountain Bike Association and our consultant VeloSports, who's doing the design for that piece. But also, you know, shade for the dogs and around through the meadows. We are also planning to put some thicker hedge material, if you will, along the perimeter just so that there's a little bit of a buffer between the park and the residents that are on both the east and the west side of the park. And with that, is there any questions so far?
Yeah, what about lighting?
That's a good question. So that's something that we're just starting to dive into. We want to keep it really low level and very minimal. So this is not going to be a highly lit park at nighttime. We imagine that there's some safety lighting that will happen along this multi-use trail and then some low-level parking lighting. But again, that's something that we're just starting to scratch the surface of.
Okay.
Any other questions?
And then that was a good question, Albert. And then you may have already said this before now that I think about it, would those be like dark sky? Designated or whatever.
Yeah, we would, I think that, you know, I don't think that we're required to do that, but I think as practice, it's always good to have something that's, you know, good for migratory birds.
And also pollinators that don't get distracted by the lights and don't do their night pollination.
Oh, good to know. Okay. Yeah. And you know, one of the things like we were talking about is the low level lighting. So instead of being tall fixtures, they would be more like bollards. So, you know, 36 inches tall instead of 10 feet tall. So just keeping everything pretty low to the ground.
Yeah, that would be good. And then I was going to ask, and you may already have this in the plan, will there be electric charging stations in the around the parking lot?
There will not. You mean for like EV electric vehicles or for iPhones?
Oh, well, both. Yeah, you mentioned it.
We will not have any charging stations for iPhones.
Okay.
So everyone will have to, you know, charge their laptop before they come and sit down at the park.
I was actually thinking of EVs in the parking
lot. Yeah, we haven't asked that question. That's a really good question. So let me get back to you on that one.
It would be good because if you had like almost like a carport kind of thing that ran the length of the two sides,
mm-hmm.
so it would help keep the cars a little cooler. And then on top of that would be solar panels. And guess what? You get to charge your EV if you are driving one, and then you get extra credit for somehow because you did it.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, that would be amazing. We are looking at possibly doing solar on the other canopies. You know, some of this is budget driven. And we're proposing some of those just exactly like you were describing in a different part of the world. And even some of those in a very high end project, they're getting value engineered. One thing I will say also that's not shown on here, but it's shown a little bit later, is that these parking areas, even though everything's shown as our asphalt rather, we are going to propose at least, and we'll see where the budget goes, to do the actual stalls in a permeable paver. So to help with the stormwater there.
That'd be awesome. That'd be great.
Yeah. I want to second that idea of having solar on there. The city has some community solar going in, so that might be a partner. There's also some good vendors in town
that
could be asked to get involved in the design. But as I understand it, those systems can help pay for themselves by the electricity that they generate.
That's good to know. Yeah, it's something we will definitely explore. We haven't explored it, like I said, at the parking area. We are starting to kind of look at it for these already, you know, the structures that are proposed. So that's we'll take a look.
Mm-hmm. I have another question. Did you say that there's just porta potties? There's not a restroom?
Correct. Yes. So let's see. There's only two, right? Yes. There's one here and one here, and those are just porta potties. So those would be, we're in the middle of how to design those, but they would be porta potties, whether it's one or two set side by side with a wall around it and some sort of a roof covering over it. And I think, you know, part of the reason that we're doing that is costs. The other part is security. And from, you know, working in a few different municipalities, including Ashland, we continuously hear that the cost of putting one of, you know, a permanent structure in is really expensive. It's hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then there's a vandalism piece. So it by having a porta potty, it reduces the maintenance. It reduces the vandalism, and the upfront costs are a lot less.
So are these like the, you know, the blue rooms that you see, or are they more like the composting toilets, they're installed?
No, these would be like the blue rooms. Yeah. We were looking at composting toilets, but again, the maintenance, especially for, you know, the Parks Department would just be, there's a learning curve to them, and if they're not maintained, they become a serious nuisance. So,
okay. Thanks.
All right, with that, I'll continue. This is getting a little bit, you know, past that illustrative piece into something that's, you know, has more labels on it and more specific information. And I think I've gone through most of it. One of the things that Aaron did mark up is where we are. You know, where we think the, you know, the biggest bang for your buck for pollinator, like planting would be here, of course, around the community garden. I'm assuming that there'll be lots of wonderful pollinators within this rectangle or square, but also something on the outside to contribute to that pollinator area. this area down here on the bottom of the page, the actual line of the park is more like it's maybe, I don't know, here, let's say. Once we got the actual survey back, this property line moved a little bit to the north, which opens up this great area for a possible future orchard. And so around that orchard, of course, would be another wonderful place for pollinators. And then, as I mentioned before, because this is centrally located, it's easy for the parks to maintain. This is where the majority of the people will be hanging out, you know, doing this pollinator piece right in the center in what we're calling the heart of the garden or heart of the park. One thing that we just started to talk about as well, which I'm kind of excited about, is finding hopefully a local resource for all of this area that you see hatched. I have a few acres south of town, and you know, I'm realizing that I need to find a new seed that would be beneficial to the pollinators, that's really drought tolerant. And there's a lot of different seed mixes out there, and some of them are working, but some of them work a little bit better in Portland, where it gets a little, you know, it's, there's more humidity. So doing a little bit of a test area with a seed mix that would provide this meadow with no irrigation. I mean, maybe there would be like a 2-year irrigation just to get everything, you know, seeded and rooted in, and then cut the irrigation. So this is something we're just kind of tossing around, as using this meadow piece as an educational piece for the community, but also as a experimental place for someone that was really interested in looking at different types of seeds that are climate appropriate for Ashland and you know, beneficial to the park.
So, and Christina can talk to this probably more than I can, but Vesper Meadow is investing in growing seed of appropriate natives for lawn alternatives.
Oh, that's great.
And Freshwater Trust has several contracts along the Greenway, down the valley, even into Medford, doing riparian landscaping that's you know, climate appropriate, and they've included pollinator appropriate in there. There are some local scientists resources.
That's great.
We can put you in touch with.
Yeah, that would be wonderful if you could, because it would be good to start that conversation sooner rather than later to see if it's a possibility.
Yeah, the best organization, if you will, although it isn't really for seed mix, would be the Rogue Native Plant Partnership, which is a conglomeration of multiple growers. A lot of them are not grass or forb seeds so much. They're doing more shrubs and trees. the problem I think will happen, trying to do a meadow that stays vibrant.
Exactly.
It's a problem. Mm-hmm. So native bunch grasses are excellent and they stay there all year long. They don't burn very well, but it's not a meadow. And then like there's lots of the different plants that you can grow in a quote meadow with no irrigation, but then they disappear during the hottest part of the summer and then they come back. So you know, it depends on what you're really looking for, and then so if you do put in some things that are not necessarily native, then you know, is that you know, like, please don't do bachelor buttons, please. and then the other part of the problem is where we live is Ashland, and so we have so many non-native grasses that come in, and it's a challenge to make sure that those are weeded out when you're also trying to, you know, grow a bunch of big area. So Kate was right. Vesper Meadow is doing some major projects, and they're growing with the Understory Initiative, which is actually the quote mother of RMPP that I just mentioned, Rogue Nation Partnership. And so they're doing something called occultation, which is laying down black plastic to kill the grasses. And so they're trying to get rid of all the non-native grasses that were planted back when it was a cattle ranch for cattle grazing. And they're trying to turn it back into the native And it's not easy because you have crap grass that you don't want.
Yeah.
It's hard to get rid of it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, hard to get rid of it. So I don't know what the land, I mean, I've seen the land, but I don't know what it's like, you know, there in that meadow situation. I am just suggesting that a meadow is a great idea, and it's challenging also.
Yeah, no, I think that we're ready for the challenge. You know, it's I don't see that, you know, this is not a place where you're going to go and play a soccer game. So we're going to have these pathways that are going to take you around and through it, but it's not necessarily where you're going to want to picnic, you know, at least for part of it. So some of these bunch grasses might be appropriate in certain areas.
Yeah, and there's different heights and different looks for that. And it would also help, well, this sounds funny, but it, you know, it wouldn't be as easy to traverse because it would be less walkability like a lawn. So that also can add, especially if you have contour changes, so it's more like a natural,
yeah,
and rocks and things like that.
Yeah, something a little more, bit more natural. The good thing that's working with that, or for us too, maybe, I mean, it's hard to know, but is the low point is on this Abbott side, so there's, you know, it is draining across from north to south, which, you know, might help a little bit because it's on the lower side. And I suppose it's like a lot of the soils in the area, and it's fairly clay, so it's going to hold on to that soil for a while. Or water for a while, sorry.
Speaking of water, what are the water sources? Like there's TID through that property?
There is, yes. Yeah, there is TID.
And there's no city water at this point, I'm assuming?
There might be a meter already, but there will be if there isn't.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Will that TID water be available for irrigation?
It will be. Yes. If it's available at all. Right.
Right, of course. Yeah. Question.
Become unreliable.
Yeah. A little bit. Huh? But here's a couple of pictures. You know, we're not going to do these pole lighting. Like I said, these drawings are a little bit dated. This is something similar, although I think we'll probably do more of a shed roof instead of a hipped roof, gabled roof. I mean, but you know, here's your blue room with walls and a roof. We have a couple of pavilions. Here we're showing the solar panels, as you mentioned. Could also be some shade sails in various areas. Oh, one thing I forgot to mention too is we do have a bus stop that there's not currently a bus line. There will be. Build it and they will come, sort of a thing. But this is supposed to be a bus stop over here in the corner.
And is there fencing all around that?
Good question. So over here on the west side, there's this existing wood fence that, you know, it's because these are residences, so it's the typical 6-foot fence that they have already. Here you can see that's the sign or the symbol for a fence. It's actually off of property. So that's something that Parks will be working with this owner to see if this will get a fence of some sort. Probably hopefully a short fence, might not need a big fence. Same thing with where I drew my red line, that would get a new fence. It could be your typical 6-foot fence, you know, wood fence. It could be a split rail fence. It's something that the Parks Department will negotiate with the homeowner over here. Same thing over here. These have wood fences on the east side. There is a connection off of this east side between these two houses right here. That's a public right-of-way that goes out to, I'm forgetting the name of the street. There's a little street over here.
Crocker.
Thank you. currently, I think it's just a wire and wood fence that's along Abbott that goes all the way across.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, so we haven't really decided if that's going to get replaced over on this side, south of east of the inlet here off of Abbott. Around the community garden, obviously, there would be a deer fence all the way around.
And then is there one in the front off of East Main?
No, so this would be, because this is a public right-of-way, this is a sidewalk that we hope to give a little bit of interest and a little bit of separation off of East Main. So there might be a little curve here and there so we can get some planting in between the East Main and the site on both sides. So you can see we just brought it slightly in just to give a little bit of a buffer so that it feels more comfortable to walk along.
One reason I was asking is I didn't know if there was any fencing that faces the main drag that has the opportunity for some kind of art, like, you know, some kind of mural where kids create art related to the park, and then it gets put up there. Obviously, that's long term. I'm not asking for anything.
Yeah, and I think if we did that, we'd want to keep away from East Main, but we were looking at art. Right here seems like a good, like kind of a focal point because it's right down the back into that heart. This is a thoroughfare connecting the dog area to the bike area to the playground area to the parking area. So there might be, you know, the opportunity for a focal point here. And like you said, that's pretty far out. I don't think that we're going to include that into, you know, our design, but we might include opportunities for that. You know, if the Arts Commission in 5 years wants to put a sculpture, maybe there'll be a pad here already for it, or at least, you know, some gravel that they can put it on or something, but the actual art piece is probably not. And then this split rail fence, you know, we put in for safety because we don't want a three-year-old to go, hey, mom, I'm going to go catch a ball or, you know, whatever, and run out into the parking area. So that could be, especially where it's closer to the pedestrian pathways, we could utilize some of that for some fun interactive art for the kiddos.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us the size of the areas, like how big is the community garden area going to be? There's some laid out.
Yeah, let me see if it's on the sheet.
Yeah.
It's Piper, if you go back to the black and white plan that has those highlighted areas, I think I saw it's just under half an acre for the community.
There we go. Thanks, Aaron.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. I'm sure. So the bike park is 1 acre here. Yeah, so it does have some. So the dog park is shy of an acre. Looks like that's it. Community garden. So like I said, we are leaving this up to the community gardeners to figure out how to lay out the separate plots and, you know, where some of the shared areas are and where the, you know, the separated areas are and how big wide the paths are and what the edging material is. We just wanted to go through and provide some suggestions, if you will. Some of the imagery that we liked, you know, the food forest piece, which I think could go into that future orchard area, which isn't necessarily a part of this, but also around it. You can see there's some planting over here. We could expand that planting up into this area too, which could be more like a food forest. You know, fig trees, all of those sorts of things. You know, the insect hotels, the compost areas, the shaded gathering tables, some ADA raised beds, the storage shed, workbenches. So these are just kind of capturing some thoughts that the community gardeners can use or not. And then, you know, that can be developed within the next phase with them.
How many community gardens are they proposing that would be there potentially?
There hasn't been a number. It just depends on the layout.
Right. I guess the other question is, you're saying community gardeners, are there already community gardeners? I know there's a community garden group. I guess I'm wondering how that will get decided, like who's going to be gardening there? There's other models of community gardens that have been spoken to. And I'm just wondering how this is, it seems like just a your plot, my plot kind of community garden, which is typical and worthy, but I'm wondering if there's any way of sharing some other ideas around community gardens that aren't so, typical, I guess.
Yeah, good suggestion. That's it's kind of out of our hands, but it's something that I think, that, like you said, Ashland Parks has their community garden group, I guess. And it's really, this is really their canvas to paint. So whoever they are, I think we're actually meeting with them sometime in the next few weeks. So that's a really good question. I don't know how it's going to shake out.
Okay.
Let's see. Okay. So here we are in the play area. So this is really the core of activity, except for the bike area, of course, with a playground, nature-based playground over here, a little trike track that goes all the way around it so they can feel like the big kids across the way. A multi-sport court here. There's this is the only mowed lawn in the whole site, is right around this activity zone, so that there could be maybe some, classes in the park or gathering, Tai Chi, yoga. We were hoping that this core of the park really hums with all sorts of activities and energy and people of all ages, whether they're, a one-year-old or, a senior citizen that's really utilizing this space. Here's the pump track. Like I said, this is a placeholder. The idea is that we would have one or two pump tracks, and this is a typical pump track. It's asphalted with little bumps and turns and places for the bicycle riders to really work on their skills. And then it's surrounded by the skills part, which would be a community effort. It would be actually community built with the dirt pathways, maybe some ramps. I don't know if you've had a chance to go to the BMX bike park over on the north side of town. And the BMX or the mountain bike community has really done an amazing job revamping that area and building some new ramps and jumps and things, and it's got a lot of activity. So they're quite a force, and I think they're excited to dig into this area to provide a bigger opportunity for people of all ages to work on their skills. Dog park, like I mentioned earlier, we had a kind of a mirror flip. So the small people, the small dogs are over on the right-hand side, and the larger dogs are on the left-hand side, but the concept is all the same with, areas for the little dogs with little agility, a shaded area, fully fenced for security, and then a larger dog area. One of the ideas from Rick Launch, which I thought was kind of cool, is to utilize this stormwater feature for the larger dogs so that they could go in there and get wet during the winter months, which, as a dog owner, I'm a little lukewarm about, because it sounds like you'll be going through a lot of towels. But, I think when there was the community survey that went out, a long time ago, over a year maybe, huh? And that was one of the things that was repeated when it came to the dog park, was this idea of having a place for the dogs to play in water. And of course, we're not going to build a swimming pool, but we can utilize the natural clay soils and the slope and kind of capitalize on that during the wet seasons. Let's see, next. So this is our first pass. And this was done, let's see, oh my goodness. April, that's not that long ago, actually. We haven't really gotten into the species. That's something that's going to come in the next phase. So a couple months away. We wanted to provide some different shaded trees, some native trees, some flowering trees, screening planting. Like I mentioned, we want to have some sort of a buffer separation between the park and the houses on the east and the west side. The stormwater treatment planting, so things that can tolerate wet feet, but also don't mind the drought as well. And I think that's one of the tricks with all of these, is especially the stormwater planting, is, we want a low to very low water use plant that also doesn't mind to sit in water for a couple of weeks in January. The pollinator friendly planting, and then this meadow planting. And what I liked about this picture in particular is you have this kind of native natural meadow way, and then the pathway, and then this mowed lawn. And, you know, I think that's even going to be a trick with, the seeds and, how things will react to each other. But we have a similar situation here, where we have this, this meadow area and a pathway and a mowed lawn. So that, this path in particular, and a little bit over here as well, it'll be a little, I think if I were, Vesper Meadows or something like that, developing seeds that's, climate appropriate and, checks all those boxes, but also that can live, 5 feet away from a mowed lawn is another, science experiment, which, we're excited to learn more about or find people that will help us discover what we can utilize in those areas. Last but not least, a lot of times, especially like I said, this was for schematic design, we look at approaches before we really get into the nitty gritty of the design. And we wanted to see where our stormwater management strategies might be. And like I mentioned, we had permeable pavers at the parking area, stormwater treatment surrounding the parking area, stormwater treatment along East Main, which we've now moved to Abbott because of the slope of the site. There's also some areas where there might be some depressions because this might get built up at the hillside and this might be at grade. So this might be kind of a low spot for stormwater, gravel parking, which is permeable, and then some more rain gardens around this parking area. And that's what this just describes, the permeable paving, the bioswales, and the rain gardens, these approaches. And then also to look at the lens of the water use, like you brought up, Albert was the TID water, and we don't want to assume that we're going to have TID all summer long or possibly even at all. So we just wanted to see diagrammatically where we think some of the most water is going to be utilized versus where there's no water use at all. We see the highest water use being the community garden, and then this central lawn piece with the lowest piece of, or the lowest amount of water being used around the bike area, just because of the nature of, the asphalt pathways that will be used and the dirt paths that go around there. Also, the perimeter planting, get it established, cut the water sort of a thing. And then the meadow being one step above these nearly zero water use areas. The dog park area, the same. We could even try to find another type of seed mix that's drought tolerant, but also would take a fair amount of traffic, particularly from dogs. And then the middle is the kind of sage green, and that would be more of the high intensity planting beds, the pollinator area here, the pollinator area here, some of the stormwater treatment areas. So this is just a diagram showing our approach with that. One of the things that we're going to start to dig into a little bit more, but we just wanted to put this on our drawings to save space or save some mental space and note for later, are these temporary irrigation devices. So get things established and then cut it off. So it wouldn't be like a full irrigation system. This would be more almost like a pasture application. And then once everything is established, then they can go and cut the pipe off and take this, little wooden box, let's call it, down, and there goes the irrigation system. So, in a dream world, that this would be the solution. We just need to kind of dig into it a little bit more to see if it really is the right solution for this project.
It seems like a good idea. So I was going to ask you about this. So that would be overhead spray, I'm assuming, for...
Yes.
Okay. And then that would get moved, and then will some of the plantings have drip or nothing?
Yeah, good question. So this would be primarily for this...
meadow.
This meadow green area, yeah, for establishment. And this area here, that device might be more permanent, because if the dogs really tear it up, then it has to get overseeded and we start over again. All of the rest of this area, except for the lawn, would be drip irrigation. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, good. I figured, but I like your idea for that temp.
Yeah. We're exploring it, so we'll see. Yeah. Any questions?
I don't know, question, comment. I guess the overall layout seems okay. I got a question about the pump track and that area. Like, how is it being proposed being used? I mean, you're not proposing putting in big lights, so that would mean no nighttime riding, I would assume.
Correct.
As the park will probably have some kind of hours.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm just wondering, like, how much utilization that area is going to get. It takes up the larger portion of the park, obviously. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious about that. Like, I don't know. Because I know there is, like you mentioned, that other park, or not park, the other kind of dirt track over there by the, on the other end of town.
Uh-huh.
I'm just curious how much interest there is. I mean, I'm just trying to get a read on that.
Sure.
Yeah,
no, and that's a really good question. And I was in your shoes a year and a half, 2 years ago, and I started to do some research and drove around to Bend and some, Redmond and down to Redding. And these sorts of facilities and parks are very, very popular. They're becoming more popular. And it's especially for Ashland, which has this growing contingency of mountain bikers and people coming from all over the region, but also traveling, from California, from Washington, from Idaho, to come to places like this. It seems I think that this might be small, even for the park, but it's much land mm-hmm. that we can give to this use. It'll be a gem, I think, for our community to be able to have one of these in our park systems.
Okay.
I don't know a number. We did some studies, with the traffic, and for example, in Bend, they have, oh my goodness, Leslie might know how many they have. I think they have at least three of these in that town, and they are well used.
Right. Okay,
I think we can also, there were several surveys that went out amongst the community, and this was overwhelmingly over and over again, one of the top choices by a huge number of the respondents. So the community has really rallied around this concept. I think that's it is different from the Ashland Dirt Jumps or BMX Park in the sense that it is that is a little more advanced. It's got jump lines and drops that it's not the greatest area for younger folks and beginners. These are a pump track is really has a lot more flow and is kind of a different animal of a different color, but I think there's no doubt that the community has kind of rallied around this particular use, as town halls and community meetings and surveys have shown sort of over and over again.
Yeah, but, thank you, Leslie. Yeah, the Survey Monkey that went out a year ago, let's say, it was probably the darling of the park for most of the people that took the survey.
Yeah. Who received a survey, by the way? I mean, I never received one or knew about it until after it was over, so I'm not sure how that works.
And Tara might be able to speak to that a little bit more, but that is something that the Parks Department, you know, I think they put it up on their website and maybe put something on Facebook, or I don't know how it's broadcasted to the community, but it's all through the Parks Department.
So it's not the larger community, it's just people who are, whoever are involved with the Parks Department then.
I think it did go, it was on the city's website as well, with a link. But it's, you know, you would have to go to the city website and click on it and know about it. I don't know how that they advertise it otherwise.
Right. Okay.
Piper's correct. We did have it on the city's website, and we advertised it the way we do all our big events, and we emailed our user groups and also let people know who watched the APRC meetings. So sorry that you got missed on that email, Albert, but we try to reach as many people as we can. And we did have a pretty a really good turnout for that survey.
Yeah, it was fairly robust.
Mm-hmm. So are you through with your presentation, or?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is time for questions or comments or whatever.
Please, yes.
And then I can't remember, I'm sorry, I should look back at the agenda. How much time do we have for this portion of the meeting?
I think we have until 4:30.
Okay, that's good. I wasn't sure
if
we were ending at 4. I guess I'll just jump in with some comments or some questions. And then, yeah, we'll go, just go from there. This is not in any particular order, but I guess going back to the meadow, because I love this idea and I would love to see this happen, and it would help a lot of people learn what could be done. I mentioned the non-native grasses blowing in, and that's not like, oh, it might happen. It will happen. I guarantee it. And there are a real pain in the, you know what. And so there will be some need to know the difference between non-natives and natives of anything. And then when we do start planting some of the natives, depending on what's in there, they have a propensity to be weeds as well. So depending on what is put in anywhere, you know, you mentioned already the possibility of seeds migrating into the lawn. And so I guess this is just something to know about. Mm-hmm. And then that brings to the question of who is doing the maintenance of not only the pollinator part, because it's more than just the meadow, it's all the different garden areas,
right.
Which I think
yeah.
is awesome. Mm-hmm. So who's doing the maintenance of the pollinator areas, but then who's doing the maintenance of the entire area? Is Parks taking this entire thing on? Or is this, are we requiring, it's hard to say, community members, or, you know, how is all this going to be handled?
Yeah, that's a good question for Tara.
I will try to field it my best. Of course, Parks is responsible for maintaining all the parklands. We have a robust volunteer program to help us also do maintenance. And specifically, we will probably be needing volunteers to help maintain the pollinator gardens, because they take a much more specific type of maintenance. And we're also working really hard with Piper and her team and everyone to make sure that this is as low maintenance of a park mm-hmm. as possible.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to be mowing a lot. We want to make sure that it is, that's why that meadow area. But to answer your question, the Parks Department is doing the maintenance.
Okay, cool. I just assumed that, but I wanted to bring it up just because, you know, you mentioned already, which I thought was lovely, the garden for the hummingbirds and the mason bees at another project. And I think that would be wonderful to see about replicating. And then there's other ways that there can be educational components about pollinators. 70% of the bees in the world nest in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So there needs to be something about wasps versus bees. And then what if you're allergic to bees? And then, you know, to make sure that people understand that the majority of bees, 99% of bees, are not going to sting you without any provocation. I mean, there's no reason for them to do that. So, you know, the concern about bee stings is, you know, something that I guess should be talked about, although it's not relevant for most people's lives. unless of course you get a bee caught in up underneath your shirt or something, and then I'm sorry, it probably will sting you. But most bees, most bees can't sting. Most native bee species don't have a stinger. If they do, it might be like just a little, you know, prick. It's not even a mosquito bite. So the majority of bees can't even sting you, but the ones that can do that. Bumblebees and carpenter bees and honeybees, of course, are probably the ones. And then you have wasps, and people don't know a wasp from a bee a lot of times. And so this, I was wondering if there was like a board, you know, one of the big signages, I don't know what they're called, when you can stand in front of it, and it's, you know.
Yeah. Billboard sort of a deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yes, absolutely. You know, we're looking at, we just met with Tara and Michael this past week about signage. And one of the things that was brought up is, you know, not only, you know, the information about the park and the name and all that sort of thing, but also that educational piece and, you know, taking advantage of certain areas that would be best to put in, you know, I'm always reluctant to put like information on a stick. I was on the Historic Commission and we're always rolling our eyes about, you know, the plaque on the stick that says this guy died here in 1952 or whatever, you know. So trying to come up with another way of delivering that message, and maybe it's more interactive so that people like Bee City, they can, you know, there's a billboard with information on it, or it's something that we're going to be developing, I guess. The signage piece and the informational piece and the educational piece, especially if we do have some sort of a partnership with Vesper Meadows or whomever, you know, honoring that partnership and providing some education for the people to understand that sometimes the meadow is not going to look so great because it could be used as an experimental piece, you know, so we failed and we're going to try again. So I think that's always important to educate the community.
Well, that brings up the other point, which is aesthetics. And, you know, if we're in a natural environment, by the way, Vesper Meadow is almost an 1,000-acre property up at the top of Indian Memorial.
Yeah.
And what they're doing is restoring the land with tribal peoples. And so they don't work in urban areas so much. But anyway, they are working on the seed mix that they have available to them. But aesthetics is important, and so you know, getting people to understand what a meadow looks like in the dead of summer is part of the project too. So will there be deer available to this place?
I think so. For hire.
So deer will be a concern for any
people. Oh yeah.
So that's going to also limit us to some extent. I assume deer eat camas. I would assume people eat camas, so I'm going to assume deer do. Because if you have wet spots that need dry out in the summer, camas would be wonderful. But then, you know, is this going to be just deer all here?
I assume that there's as many deer here as there are on, you know, in the railroad district. But it's something that I'd have to ask the neighbors. But yeah, I'm sure that there'll be plenty of deer in this area.
They will only be able to walk in off of East Main, though. Is that correct?
They'll be able to walk in off of Abbott as well.
Yeah, and then there's another little side part, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they'll be able to walk in off of here. This will be a deer fence over here at the community garden, but this will all be open. There might be a fence, but it won't be a deer fence.
Yeah, and that's also going to impact the trees and things. I planted a native hawthorn out of my front yard outside my fence, and it's not growing because it keeps getting eaten. So native tree species would be just so important for the pollinators, since so many of our native trees are host plants for the butterfly, moth, caterpillars. But so hopefully there can be tree guards put around them and the shrubs until they get large enough.
Yes, thank you for that. We will definitely include that in our details.
Okay, perfect. And then
I'd like to interject just a second, Christina. Sure. We actually only had an hour on the agenda, so giving us another 15 minutes.
We just started after 4 too.
In addition to, you know, you're kind of focusing the pollinators on certain of the landscaped areas, but as Christina just mentioned, the trees can be good habitat, wildlife habitat as well. And I wonder how much consideration you can give to that, to nativeness, along with drought tolerantness in the storm drain areas, I mean, throughout all the plantings.
Yeah, and that's a good question. And we'll be making a matrix to make sure that, you know, all those things are checked, because some of these places are going to be stormwater. Some of them are going to be, you know, not. So making sure that we can choose the right tree, the right plant for the right location is really important throughout the whole site.
Yeah, and then the only other comment that I had, what, and I'm sorry, I thought it was 4:30, so otherwise I would have stopped. I wouldn't have said any of this. So the only other thing I was going to say, and then I'll quit, is that back to the ground nesting bees, it would be kind of cool to be able to build something that would be like a sand bank or something, but I don't think it would be more trouble than it's worth. So, all right, well, thank you for listening. Thanks. It looks like a fun project.
Thank you. Thanks for your input. Really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. If you have anything else, please pass it along.
Okay.
I have a question for Tara, for Tara. The Tree Commission and the Conservation Division of the city have had a street tree guide. Have you been provided with that?
No, but I'm sure it's on their website.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, we'll take a look at all of those lists.
Thank you, Kate.
Well, then there's also the Firewise list, but that's
yeah.
How many layers do we want to put on here?
Oh my goodness, I know. We're actually in our office. We were just talking about making a special matrix that's deer resistant, fire resistant, drought tolerant. You know, like native. Like, you know, like it starts to dwindle down pretty quickly. But sometimes you have to make hard decisions, and some things trump others. So
yeah, Firewise is a much more strongly implemented piece in the city than any of the others.
Can I ask how much land area there is in these designated pollinator garden zones that will require a little bit more detail-oriented maintenance? So zones that will have like pollinator shrubs and zones, kind of like the rain gardens, that will require some knowledge of plants and volunteers to kind of pick around the plants. Do we know how much actual area is planted with that that type of landscaping?
No, not at the moment. We don't. And it has evolved since this plan even. So it's one of those things that keeps on moving. I don't even know if I would want to take a guess at this point. But it's something that we can definitely figure out in the future.
It might be good to know that just so that we can get an idea of how much maintenance and how much maintenance time that's going to require, because different types of planting areas require a different level of volunteerism, volunteer attentiveness. And sometimes it's not feasible to just put any old volunteer work group on a zone.
Well, that's a really good point. You know, and I think that if we could, I mean, this is what I'm thinking is, you know, back to that diagram that Aaron had marked up, is concentrating the really heavy maintenance pollinator areas to something that would benefit the orchard, something that would benefit, maybe it can bleed up around this community garden, and then again in the heart with the rainwater or the, you know, stormwater treatment areas, not as high intensity as, you know, those areas. So it's, you know, I think that you can have some areas that are going to be very specific, very high intensity, and not spread it all over the place. I think that's back to what Tara was saying. And something that has been drilled into our office since the genesis of this project, and that is low maintenance, low maintenance, low maintenance. And if we do have maintenance, it needs to be in a very specific area. So it's going to be a little bit of a balancing act to make sure that we can, you know, have a stormwater treatment area that's not going to take a lot of time maintenance-wise. So, you know, all of this is something that we're going to be exploring in this next phase.
And I have one last question that I think is actually very pertinent. How is the land going to be dealt with from the way it currently exists to, you know, the proposed project. In other words, like where there is grass currently or something growing currently, and then there will be something growing like the meadow, not the pump track, because I'm assuming that's going to be just pretty much raised and started all over. But
yeah.
Like what kind of, will that be like completely scraped and then start all over? Or are we going to be dealing with whatever is in that land right now? Will there be blackberries? Will there be cheatgrass? Will there be crabgrass that will show its head? Do you see
yeah.
That?
Yeah. I mean, thank God there's no star thistle here yet. So that's what one thing I've noticed. that's a really good question. I mean, I think everything basically from this line right here to the north is going to get raised, you know, because it's high intensity use. This community garden area is also going to get scraped, and, you know, we'll put down bark chip pathways and, you know, however that gets developed. This area right here is kind of up for grabs. So, you know, if it's better for us just to try and, you know, and ideally put out some seed, keep putting out some seed and then see who wins, right? But that doesn't always work when you're dealing with noxious weeds in a native ecosystem. So
that's something I think it's part of your installation planning is a time period for that, the tarp cover. Right.
Yeah, if that's something that happens. Yeah, definitely. Uh-huh.
And I guess I would also add to the group that there's a possibility that some of the park components are going to be phased in. So that might be something where we see certain areas that are developed first, depending on budget and priorities and maintenance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have a question. Was it... I would like to see, I mean, the community garden larger area. I know it seems like it's kind of squeezed in there, and I don't know how that would work. I like it that it's on the Abbott Street side. It gets the most sun, that works, and there's another entrance that all works and fits in, makes it, you know, except from the dog park and things. But, and then, so I don't know how that would work, but I would just think it would be more advantageous for the larger community to have a larger community garden there. I don't know who gets to make that decision, how big something is or not. It seems like it's fit into that space mainly because of the entrance off of Abbott. If the entrance of Abbott was further east, maybe the community garden would be bigger. So it seems like that kind of dictates the size of the community garden squeezed in there, at least from my perspective. So I'm just pointing that out.
I like that comment, though. It might be an existing driveway, but it would be nicer to have a larger garden area. We always have over demand for the community garden space.
Yeah, and we did increase the size from the original proposal. I think we nearly doubled it. And I think this is close to the size of Ashen Creek. If it's half an acre, what's Ashen Creek, like 0.6 or something?
Yeah.
So just for perspective, it's getting close to the size of that community garden. And then also with the addition of, you know, the opportunity that might be down here, I don't know where my little red line went to, but, I'm in the wrong drawing. Yeah. Down here, you know, this would also be something that the community gardeners would need to adopt. You know, for the maintenance piece for, you know, doing an orchard down here and, you know, some other planting that would be deer resistant. And, you know, this area still needs to get programmed. So, you know, that's increasing it again by another 2/3. So there's quite a bit of room for the community garden. And also just to say, when we first started this project, we started with the community garden here. It was a little bit smaller, and then we put it here, and I forgot why it didn't work there. And then we actually put it over here, and that was kind of like, oh, interesting. But then the driveway became longer, and the paving became longer, and so there were several studies as far as where to put the community garden, and putting it in this corner, because then this is more of a passive entrance into the park versus this is going to be a very busy entrance into the park, kind of separates this passive piece of the garden over here on the south side to the more active piece over on the north side. So just provided a little bit of good separation between those two uses.
I actually appreciate you mentioning that, because I think the neighborhoods, the housing neighborhoods there will appreciate that.
Yeah, and that was part that, you know, having the community garden over on the southern edge so that it is more passive was definitely something that the HOAs and the neighborhoods were voting for. Before we were even put on this project, there was a community meeting. I don't remember when it was, like 2019, I want to say. And everyone was given like little shapes. You know, one was for the dog park and one was for the pump track and one was for the community garden. And they got to shuffle it around on a piece of paper. And there were like five groups. I wasn't there, Tara, so you could fill in. But it just seemed like every single one of those little studies that the community members actually created, the community garden either landed over here in this southwest corner or over here on this east side in this little piece over here. So we've looked at it in all different shapes and sizes and to create, you know, to make something that's about the same size as the Ashen Creek was the goal.
Cool. Okay, well, I think I want to draw this to a close. I really appreciate Libby bringing you guys in and you, Piper and Aaron being, you know, spending this time with us. We've been looking forward to seeing these drawings and having this discussion for quite a while. So it's been really, really good to have you here.
Thanks so much, Kate. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, thanks for letting us be a part of your meeting. And please reach out to Libby or myself if you have any more comments or questions.
Thank you. That was very great. I'm moving around at the moment, so I turned off my video, but that was very appreciative.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Piper.
Bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Back to our agenda. We now have less than 45 minutes and less than half an hour of Leslie's time. And the first order of business that we did not take care of at the beginning was the minutes from the June meeting. And then we have three items of unfinished business that I want to try at least touch on before we go. Now, does anyone have any comments on the minutes as written? Because I've got something.
No.
Okay, so I Libby might be able to just pull up my email. I don't have that in front of me, but the on page three of the minutes. The second paragraph, the top of the page, when it starts out, Leslie suggested that we might want to help find a beekeeper to support the hives at SOU, and that this could strengthen our connection with them. Absolutely. I just wanted to rephrase the next sentence. We should be cognizant of how much we stress the importance of honeybees versus native bees, to actually say that our preference is native bees and other pollinators over honeybees and hives, but we can certainly connect them with a beekeeper.
I would like to thank Kate for saying that. Appreciate it.
Good point. Thanks.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. I've just been noticing some of the transcription here on the conversation about Faye. I would prefer that just be stricken. It doesn't seem to be necessary to be in the notes about her unplugging for the summer or anything. And
sure, that's fine. I can
agree. Agreed. Yeah.
I tend to try to catch as many details as possible. So, it's not necessary. A lot of that isn't necessary for action minutes anyway.
Okay.
So where are those comments? Do we want to strike that?
So it's number four on page two under SOU student participation. I recommend that we just strike out the first two sentences. The students we've been reaching out to have not been getting back to us. Commissioner Eldridge feels sure that they
yeah, just the first and the last sentence. Yeah. Right. Since students are not replying over the summer, we'll revisit in the fall.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, great. Thanks.
A quick spelling error on in the same section, third paragraph.
Bex is B-E-C-S, not B-E-X. Her name is like Rebecca, B-E-C-S.
Okay, then do I have a motion to approve the minutes as amended?
I'll motion to approve.
A second.
All in favor? Anyone opposed? As a matter of formality, I should ask, but I don't think we have a member of the public here. This is an opportunity for the public to address us. And we have none here. Moving on in the agenda then, to the unfinished business. There are three items: the Firewise plant database, which I immediately thought of when Piper started talking about all the cross-referencing all the different plant choices.
Which we thought about that too.
Yeah. Yeah. And the next one is to have a working group for the garden tour next year and get an update on the pollinator garden reviews and the maintenance of the approved garden list. Does anyone have something else that they also want to bring up? Leslie.
I would just like to sort of, now that it's fall again, just re-clarify my goals in terms of SOU and SOU students and kind of hopefully that would be a short topic, but.
Okay, but since you have to leave early, maybe we should do that first.
And then if there's a moment, I could talk briefly about the presentation to the Glen Vista State HOA on Sunday, if you like. It's not, yeah, it's up to you.
Yeah, but let's hold that. I've done two or three of these meetings now, and we usually run short of time. Okay, so the scope of work for the Firewise plant database. Leslie, do you want to go first on your goal, on your goals and role before I get into
Well, that? I'm going to try to keep, I'll just try to keep it really short. My understanding is that my top priorities, at least in terms of the City USA with campus here, is to find a reliable and appropriate student who's interested in serving on the committee. And that's something that I can probably have greater success with now than a month or 2 months ago. And then we have discussed some capstone type projects. That's a little bit of a bigger fish to fry. We have had a few ideas. It is this fall, there's a class called ES210, where if the city through B-City USA had a feasible sort of germ of an idea that they could bring and present to this class, that would be it, and students loved it and they said, hey, we want to do this. That would be the beginning of starting to form a really good research question and a capstone. And we now have research capstones and applied capstones. So we've kind of added this applied layer to it so that people who want to do project-based capstones can do that without necessarily having them be like answering a research question. So we might want to table that for later, but those are the two things that I recall us really focusing on.
Okay, actually, that's a perfect transition because that's my purpose of having the Firewise plant database on here as the first item. I am only just back, not yet a week, from 7 weeks in a different kind of heat with humidity instead of heat with heat. But that means I haven't reviewed my messages. I had talked to Charisse and I had gotten replies with you, Leslie, from a couple of other profs over at SOU saying just what you said, which is that if we have a scope of work, we can write down something of what the city would like to get from any assistance we could offer related to the contents of the plant database, then Charisse and I could bring that to either bring it to the class or whatever. And I would just get a hold of you, Leslie. Let me know when that's going to be, that discussion needs to happen. And I'll get in touch with Charisse to get the city side of it organized too.
Okay.
And I wanted to give Carolyn a chance here, because when I spoke with her earlier today, she has a great interest in Firewise landscaping in addition to pollinator. And so you're welcome to say whatever you'd like to say. And I would ask you if you would like to be on that working group with me.
Sure. I would. I do have a interest in Firewise. I gardened for over 40 years in a area that we had to have only, you know, Firewise plants and drought tolerant. So I will do it.
Okay. All right. Great. Thanks. Anyone else, Christina or Albert? Or Libby, want to add anything on that one? I'll pick that one up with Leslie and Charisse and Carolyn.
Okay, great. Sounds good to me for now.
Okay.
And in the minutes, the working group right now is Kate and Carolyn, and coordinating with Charisse, who is not part of the committee but would be working with us, and then getting that information back to Leslie when we know how to interface with the ES 210 class.
Yeah.
When exactly to meet with the ES 210 class. Okay.
Okay. Yep. The follow on question really is, we had for a variety of reasons deferred doing a garden tour this year, and then also kind of agreed among ourselves that we would try to make it both a pollinator garden tour and a Firewise garden tour in some fashion. We have not made any further steps towards what that would look like and who would work on that. Doing the garden tour itself is something that I've not done. Christina has, and Nancy probably did that in previous years. So what do others think?
I think it's great. A couple of thoughts. I haven't prepared any thoughts about this until you asked for this meeting. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how many Firewise and pollinator gardens we have. I'm sure we can find some. And then the tour, as Libby knows, is a fair amount of work. It's organizing it, and then would we be putting together a booklet, I guess is where I was going with that. And I don't remember how many hours you would have spent last or 2 years ago, I guess. But there is a good bit of work, and then talking with or inviting the gardeners to participate and then contribute verbiage and photos, and then lining it up so that if it's multiple days, like we had 1 year, one weekend versus just one day. So I have some information that we used from before that was sort of a schedule and the different steps. And then, you know, do we have a budget to get this all printed and so forth and so on. So there is it's a pretty comprehensive project. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if some of the gardeners might want to participate as part of a committee to get it done. So, yeah.
Christina, are you asking whether some of the garden volunteers at North Mountain Park would help us? No,
I'm sorry. Thank you for clarifying. No, the actual pollinator gardeners.
Ah. Right. And we haven't other than on a one-on-one basis, we haven't had any interaction with them for some time now.
Yeah, right. And then a few of them sort of helped a couple years ago. We don't need to go into time now. I can give you an idea of what we did before.
I'm sure we can revisit that organizational stuff because Libby talked about that last spring when we were thinking about it in the first place.
And I'm happy to have a pretty big role in the development of that because I'll be involved in the marketing and the development of the booklet and the maps, working with Leah on maps. And so quite a good chunk of that, I'm willing to carry as staff. And then the piece that I don't know how difficult it will be is ensuring some sort of target of not just highlighting our approved pollinator gardens, but also incorporating that FireWise showcase. I don't know how difficult that's going to be. I don't know if we're going to have gardens that achieve that FireWise goal and make it real easy to feature that, or if maybe that's a little aspirational right now. And if that FireWise focus might be a little aspirational, we do know that we can run the pollinator garden tour as read as we've done it in the past, and offer what I would suggest is a one-day tour as the low bar to clear. A one-day tour that's formatted the same as the other tours that we've done, using the same type of template for the booklet, the same type of marketing, maybe a feature article on the first two pages that talks about FireWise, but maybe doesn't commit ourselves to featuring a FireWise tour.
Right. And it might be, because I think partly I'm going to be relying on Charisse, because she's been doing, Charisse Sidoriak is a volunteer fire risk assess evaluator for citizens throughout town. And I haven't talked to her for a couple of months, but she was doing those. She did mine. And before she got kind of totally dedicated to that plant database that she developed, she was talking to just one or two, maybe three, I don't know, of people that have pollinator approved gardens that are also on the FireWise Commission. Oh. So it may be that we can just identify one or two who would be that subject matter addition to the pollinator garden tour.
I have a question. Yes, you just mentioned the FireWise Commission. Would they be involved in this? And one, and two, the gardens have to be both FireWise and pollinator. I mean, maybe this is a pollinator garden and this is a FireWise garden, and maybe there's some gardens that cross over. But so I'm just wondering how that all would pan out, I guess. So with first question would be, was the FireWise committee going to be involved in this in any sort of way? And then second, how do we distinguish what's a pollinator garden, what's a FireWise garden? I mean, maybe there's three criteria. One is both, and one is either one, either or, I guess, is how I would put it.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Libby and then Carolyn.
Well, I would propose that the FireWise, the Fire Commission write the one or one and a half page feature article at the front of the booklet, which allows them to have a little bit of a platform and talk about the importance of this crossover. And I would also maybe suggest that if Charisse is able to identify one or two gardens that achieve both targets of being pollinator friendly and FireWise, that's probably enough great. And I don't necessarily know if we need to feature a FireWise landscape that's not pollinator friendly, that meets that criteria, but not ours.
Right.
It doesn't seem like we'd need to feature that in the booklet, but if we can find one or two gardens that achieve both goals, we might have what we need to do the tour.
Libby, remind me how many gardens are typically on a one-day tour.
I can look that up and you can go to the next thing while I'm looking.
Okay. Carolyn?
No, I was just going to say what Libby said, but I also believe that having a pollinator garden and a firewise garden together are not that difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't find it that difficult. It's just learning a little bit about it. So the two together shouldn't be so hard, but it strikes me as being a newbie and just trying to learn things here that, as Libby said, if we could find one or two that are already firewise and pollinator, that would be enough. And from there, just keep on doing research and finding others for the future. You know, maybe at some point in time having a two-day event, but right now it seems like the one or two would be enough. Would Clarice be the one to be able to find that information out for us?
I may go to Brian also with her. Brian Hendricks is the city fire department's.
He's a FireWise person, yeah.
FireWise person there, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Could I say something about that?
Yeah.
Well, Kate, aren't you a FireWise and a B-City USA garden?
Yeah, in a sense, yeah.
Okay. So yeah,
I actually did a major change. I actually removed all the new plantings right up against my house and put in a decomposed granite path.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Since we were there, but I think earlier in this conversation, we had talked about having either or to help, you know, the FireWise people get the word out. So in other words, I think there had been talk, maybe I'm misremembering, that you could be just a FireWise, but I actually think it would be very interesting to have one only FireWise and not a pollinator garden on the tour, because frankly, I hope I'm okay saying this, I'm a little worried about what a FireWise garden does for pollinators. And so I would like to be able to see what a FireWise garden is that is not pollinator friendly, because I can drive now, unfortunately, through too many towns and I see a garden that is rock. There is nothing else in the garden, in the front yard, except rock. And it's pretty FireWise, I guess. I'm not really sure. One could argue that point, I think.
Go ahead, Libby.
I know that we're all curious to see what that looks like, but I wonder if that's something that that we need to work out internally before putting a FireWise garden that we think doesn't qualify or doesn't benefit pollinators in a showcase position.
Okay.
And opening it up for criticism rather than going to one of these rock gardens that we might doubt the habitat value of and talking, you know, internally about that. Because I'm also curious about what that looks like, but I just don't know if it's something we want to bring the public into and open them up to.
That's fine. It just seemed like such a good discussion point. If you have no flowers, then I don't, yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to bring that up. So yeah, we'll keep the pollinator.
I was going to say, a FireWise garden isn't fireproof. So just putting that out there, helped people put in FireWise gardens, and so I'm just putting that out there. So maybe I don't know why, but it's just.
Well, and that's an area where the terminology is continually changing. Even the FireWise logo, the meaning of it is changing. They call the city and Charisse in her role call them fire risk assessors.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're right, yeah, you can reduce the fire risk, but you're not gonna remove it, and especially since the fire risk assessment around your home is a lot more than just your plants, right? It's what's your siding made of, and what sort of openings and how big are your windows. There's a lot of other things that go into the fire risk assessment.
Okay, cool.
Libby.
And I just want to take a moment. I noticed a moment to pause and apologize to Leslie for not being aware of the time that we were going until 5. I'm so sorry. The emails went around, but I didn't change the calendar event itself until today.
No worries. It's a constant
our constant shifting landscape with all the APRC things.
I remember the effort we've gone to just to have meetings at a time you can come at all.
So I'm very sorry, and I realize that it's the quarter till, and I don't want to keep you. So if you had anything else you wanted to say, Leslie.
Yeah.
No, I will just, Kate, I'll connect with you later one-on-one and talk a little bit more about some of the SOU things. And then I'm going to try to find someone good for us.
Cool.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Good. Thanks.
Bye.
Let's see.
Yeah,
okay.
I felt bad about that, folks. She didn't realize. And then when I adjusted the calendar event, that's when she caught on that it was extended till 5.
Because the agenda was always 2 hours when it came out.
Yeah, she just didn't see that part. It was the only part she was looking at was the part that I didn't update until today. All the other emails she didn't.
That's all good.
She's always juggling. We're used to that.
Okay.
I think we all are. Okay, so the real purpose of what I would like to get out of having this on the agenda is at least get a start on who's going to work on the concept for the garden tour. Libby will dig out all the information about previous booklets and how many gardens and stuff like that. When we need to be ready to be in the Parks and Rec guide, all those details. But really, to me, what seems like the first step is getting to Charisse and the Firewise Safety Commission and see how they want to take part in this with us. And then we'll know whether we're going ahead with one or two Firewise gardens and what does that do to our content versus we just need to reach out to some of the pollinator gardens and consider if we're going to have an event. What I remember from last winter was that there had been an invitational gathering of all the approved gardens for people to get together and talk, and then we would use that venue to kind of solicit who would be interested in being on the tour that year. So that stuff all comes later. The key is it going to be Firewise? And therefore are we having a interaction with the other commission?
And I think that we can establish a timeline for the pollinator social, the release of the marketing information for the guide, the target planning date to have everything ready for the booklet. And that stuff is not necessarily contingent on the Firewise component. Yeah. We can continue to move along that trajectory. And then if we are lucky enough to have our gardens that meet both criteria and our goals line up, then we know what we're featuring in the booklet. But we can continue to just like chip away at it using the current trajectory that we've already set up. And then let me know as we're going along if additional like pages need to be added to the booklet or if the booklet needs to have a specific kind of additional little logo on the top of a garden that has that criteria. You know, it's not that hard. It'll look very similar to the previous booklets, but some of them will have red font and a cool little logo at the top. So.
Okay, then so what I'm hearing is that Libby will refresh and identify our scheduling needs. And I will reach out to Charisse and Brian Hendricks about the Firewise Safety Committee's participation and whether we can easily identify one or more gardens. I'm happy to put mine on if you guys actually want to put my garden on there. It's a pretty young garden.
Right.
Well, it's a pretty young goal to do both of those things. So.
Yes.
And particularly to have that discussion in town, right? I mean, there's clearly folks like Carolyn and Charisse and Dan Dawson who've been grappling with the, you know, that duality for some time. But the having either the, I don't know whether the master gardeners around here are also talking about it. That would be another piece of outreach that I would be interested in doing around this, because they also do a garden tour. And why are we separate, and do they want to collaborate, or and do we want to collaborate on a tour?
Are you talking about the Ashland Garden Club?
Yeah.
Okay. I can discuss that with the Ashland Garden Club.
Okay.
Well, you said the tour, the master gardeners do the tour, not the Ashland Garden Club.
That's two different. Okay. I didn't realize that was two different responsibilities or entities.
Yeah. The Jackson County Master Gardeners out of OSU Extension and Central Point. And then then the Ashland Garden Club, they don't do tours that I know of. And they're based out of, North Mountain Park.
Okay. All right. I didn't realize that distinction. Yeah.
When you said Ashland Garden Club, I thought, oh yeah, those are my contacts. But I don't have any contacts in the Jackson County Master Gardeners out of OSU Extension. Does anyone here know someone in that group?
Is Nancy?
I do.
And I have a couple of friends, and I've been invited to the Ashland Master Gardeners monthly meeting. It's just not something I've added to my calendar.
The president of the Ashland Garden Club is Sherry Morgan, and she's pretty active with the Jackson County Master Gardeners. It's the Ashland Garden Club and then the Jackson County Master Gardeners. So I'm happy to talk to Sherry, or Kate, I connect you with Sherry, whichever.
Okay, so Christina, can I just talk with you and Libby then about what's, because I didn't realize until now that Ashland Garden Club and the Master Gardeners were a distinct group and a distinct set of activities.
There's a lot of overlap. Like the Garden Club gets a lot of information from the Master Gardeners, but it's a totally different. There's like the Talon Garden Club, the Phoenix Garden Club. I mean, so there's a lot of garden clubs. But then there's the Master Gardener, which is Jackson County, which is not a club per se. So it's a different entity, I suppose. Different mission, I suppose. And I'm happy to talk to you about that. And then we do have, back to the tour, we do have some historical lists of projects and steps that need to happen. So we don't have to start from the drawing board. We can use what we've got and then just tweak that based on what needs to happen this time.
For the steps to launch the tour, Christina?
Yeah, so okay. I have that on my documents and so forth. I'm sure I've shared them to you, but I don't know if you have the most current ones.
All right. Okay, so I'm going to focus on the project, the capstone project description, and the contact with Charisse first, and then talk with you about the tour organizing a bit later this month, early October.
When would we need to have like a tour set, you know, like what's January or February or?
That's the schedule stuff that Libby's going to refresh for us.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I already looked up a moment ago. In 2018, we did 16 pollinator gardens in one day. And that was, if I recall, too many to hit in one day, which is why the very next year we broke it into 2 days. So I feel like that was the first thing I was going to look up was the number of gardens. If I was also going to look at 2019 when we broke it up into two, we did fewer. And then the other thing you were going to ask me was summer guides. Okay, so the summer guide is released in see. The proposal deadline for the summer guide is early January.
Is when?
Is early January.
Okay.
Sometimes it pushes out a few weeks into January, but mm-hmm. we'd want to have a date picked out by then so that we can tell the Parks and Rec guide developers to hold that space in the Parks and Rec calendar.
Right.
We don't have to have all the details worked out yet, but we need to have like a short kind of generic little blurb mm-hmm. about the pollinator tour and what day we plan to have it on by early January.
So does the gardener social and the selection of the gardens happen separately?
Usually, yeah.
From that, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That deadline is just for the date and the description that it's happening. And yeah. then we have time to work more closely with the gardeners to figure out who's actually going to be on the tour. We have months to hone that.
Okay. All right. Okay. So I'm used to seeing we've nearly run out of time and didn't get to our third item on the agenda, but we also need to plan our next meeting, pick our next meeting date.
Does it make sense for me and Christina to just meet about the pollinator garden list? Thank you for sending it to me, Christina. It looks good. I just have a couple of questions, and it doesn't seem like we have to take the whole committee's time with it, but maybe you and I can get a Zoom meeting where we can share a screen and you can tell me what the different colors and the different colored fonts and the different little notes all mean, because I'm going to try to tease that apart.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good. Yeah.
So, yeah, that way we can turn our attention to the next meeting rather than.
That's fine. Yep, I agree.
Albert.
Yeah, I have one more thing. Well, I did briefly talk to the market manager at the farmer's market about tabling there, and there was somebody else on their board they need me to go through to get that cleared. So I'm just wondering if I'm open to doing it. I know the market's only going for another couple months, but it's a nice time to be at the market too. It's a fall. So I don't know, Kate and I talked about doing that at some point. I'm going to follow up on that, and I guess I can get back to Kate personally on that. And then I'm assuming Christina has most of, at North Mountain Park, has most of the tabling materials and stuff.
All the materials are with Libby and Jen at North Mountain Park, yeah.
I haven't gone through them lately, but when Kate brought them back to me, we put them upstairs so that we could
Boxes down. Yeah, do that. Contact me about the tabling. There's also the Bear Creek Salmon Festival coming up that's at North Mountain Park that is actually advertised on the city website today.
Yeah. Are you planning on tabling at the Salmon Festival? Because it's unfortunately probably too late to propose another exhibitor table. Unless you put one in and I wonder.
Not a new one, no. I'm part of the Water Action Group. Mm-hmm. So Julie Smitherman and Cody Scoggins have a table already. Oh. And they've invited some of us in the Ashland Climate Collaborative Water Action Group to help them table.
Okay. Yeah, I was like, oh, I don't think that the city has a table.
But when we did it on Earth Day, I brought some of that stuff along and I just had it available. And if people were interested in that side of the conversation about water conservation in gardens with natives as plants, I had it available.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's great, Albert. Get a hold of me when you find out. I talked to the market manager way earlier in the summer before they had to leave the armory, and I haven't been to their new location, but they're also still doing Oak Street, right?
Only until sometime in October, ending soon.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's usually no room for tabling at Oak Street anyway.
Uh-huh. Okay. So. Yeah. Okay. Okay. For our next meeting date then, we've already met, I think, five times this year.
We met three times regarding goal setting.
Yeah. Do we want to have a December meeting, or do we want to have the know that the working groups are going to be in touch with me and with Libby, and we hold our meeting in January?
I feel like people's schedules usually make December pretty difficult to schedule.
Yeah.
And January still counts as a winter meeting. Maybe what we could do is, if you'd like to meet in January, then we only have to decide whether we will have a regular meeting and revisit the goals that we've already established and just keep that trajectory, or we can have it be a goal setting discussion for 2023, which I don't know if that's something that we want to do, or if we just want to meet again as usual in January and look at the goals that we already have bitten off.
I'm fine with going to January, not meeting in December, or I guess it would be December, but I just wanted to ask, is there any decision that needs to be made by the group before proceeding with the tour, because you've got your January deadline for the, but maybe it's later. I don't know what the deadline is for the Wolf Mountain Park guide. What am I trying to say?
Yeah, the guide. Yeah, that's, we're going to need to have a small blurb written up and a date picked out by early January. So
is that something that the whole committee needs to, consider and agree on, or can we just have the working group members do that? Mm-hmm. But Libby?
I think that's fine.
Yeah, it's fine with me.
Who's our, can I ask who's our working group for that?
Good question.
I'm happy to help as much as I can. I don't have a lot of time these days, but I'm happy to help with the tour. I have institutional knowledge, I think is what the word is called, along with Libby. So I can help with that.
Okay. I would definitely like help later on for the usual tour part. The first steps that I was undertaking include the Firewise committee members, and whether we're doing that jointly and what that looks like.
Yeah, I think you and Carolyn, you're fine with Firewise, but I'm happy to help with the structure and the marketing part of it, and looking at what needs to be done overall, and working with Libby on the booklet and that kind of thing. But I don't, the Firewise component, that's fine.
If three of us meet, if Christina and Carolyn and I all meet together, do we need to make a notice about it? Is that a public meeting? Because that's a majority of our members.
Yeah, it's more than two.
Yeah. Do we need to meet all three of us? Or maybe we can have it. Maybe we can ask Rachel.
Well, we can try to avoid meeting. It's just sometimes that's the better way to brainstorm with more people instead of trying to do a sequential, which is also getting in a strict legal sense for a city council, sequential meetings is against the law. we want to try to operate, without getting too egregious about it, to operate a little bit more flexibly than that. At this level, because we're just a subcommittee of the Parks Commission.
How about this? Christina and I will meet regarding the timeline and the tour booklet. Kate and Carolyn can meet about how the Firewise element overlaps. Albert, we haven't penciled your name in anywhere.
He's tabling with me.
When we are trying to bring those two things together, like the pollinator tour structure and then the Firewise component, we're trying to bring those two things together. Maybe that requires it to happen in one of these meetings where everybody's here and everybody touches base and it's a public meeting.
How about this, Libby? Because we don't announce the public meeting much in advance of the meeting. If we decide that we need to make it an official meeting that has a public notice, we can just do that. It takes about a week in advance, right? I think it's 48 hours notice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
if we run into that. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And then if we have committee members added because, you know, that like a pollinator garden person wants to be participating, then, you know, they can come to the public meeting anyway.
So. And anybody,
they can also, we can include them, anyone who wants to help us out from the pollinator gardens or from SOU. They're not members of the committee, so the numbers don't matter.
They can come on and hang out in working groups with us, which would be amazing.
Yeah.
Because yeah. We could share the load and they don't cause a quorum to happen because they're not members of the meeting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Carolyn, is this all making sense to you? I know we've been talking a lot about procedure and I don't want to lose you.
Procedure, I understand from other meetings, but no, you haven't lost me, almost, but not quite. I'm understanding.
Good. Do you have any questions?
No.
Okay, well, it's after 5 o'clock.
So have we formally welcomed Carolyn to the group?
We did at the beginning.
Oh, we did. I'm sorry.
You can say it again.
I must have just completely missed it. Anyway, thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
I feel like we had had more time, I would have liked Carolyn to like tell a little bit about herself and, you know, get a platform for that. But the meeting was just so jam packed. So maybe if we have a little bit more of a leisurely time next time, we can get to know each other better.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of actually picking a date for the January for a meeting in January, we need to start working with Leslie on that already. She's one of our she's essential to us. We really want to schedule our meetings around when she can come.
So you'll just do a doodle poll again for that?
I guess so. I think
yeah.
So.
Okay.
Second or third week in January.
Okay. Yeah. I'll doodle poll for the second or third week in January.
I have one. So we're still looking for committee members too, obviously, or another one.
We can use more.
Okay. Yeah. Just putting that out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Do what you can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
One question about that doodle poll. In the past, I have tried a smattering of times and dates. But I feel like our group does better at the 3:30 start time. Is that the best time for some of you?
Good time.
It's good for me. It's better for me.
I'm going to do my best. I think what I'll do just to keep the doodle poll simpler is just doodle poll that 3:30 start time. But I'll do it across 2 weeks worth of dates. That way we'll know which of you are available, but that time will be kind of set.
So it'll be 3:30 to 5 then, correct?
Yeah, maybe 4:30, but maybe 5 if it gets long.
Well, we've been doing.
I don't have any luck with shorter meetings, not the ones I've been to.
We have been doing 3 to 4:30, but if you want to move it 3:30, that's fine. But
oh, sorry.
I can't.
Yes. No. Thank you for fixing that for me.
Okay. It's 3 to 4:30 is what we've been doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds good.
All right. Well, thanks everybody. There's other B-City reporting responsibilities and stuff when I get my head back around everything that's going on this fall. I'll talk with you individually about it. But we need to. I'm aware that that's another thing that we need to do in January. So that report to B-City USA.
And please do email me if you have any other feedback about the East Main Park project. I feel like. I had a lot of thoughts, but I didn't get time to say them all. I didn't want to take up bandwidth. So I made notes on the side of things that I want to talk to people about.
Okay.
You can do the same. If you have things that we didn't have time to get through, shoot me an email.
Will do.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay.
Nice meeting everyone.
Yes. All right. Thank you, Carolyn. Good to see you, Albert. Sure. Libby, Christina.
Thank you, everybody. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.